Okay, let me get started. Welcome back. Any comments, midterm, otherwise? Yeah, they were out of stock of black and I had to buy a new one. Well, let me take a note to mark down Jacob's grade. The PCBs are not in yet. So, hopefully today or soon. I'm going to be leaving town again. I'll be back in time for Friday's lecture, so we'll still have Friday's lecture. If PCBs come in the interim, talk to shipping, and you guys can just go down to the first floor and talk to the people in shipping and get your board. Your components are in. You can go get them if you want. I don't know how useful that is without a PCB, but you're welcome to. For your components, it's easiest if you print out what you ordered from DigiKey and take it down there so you can compare to the packing slips to find which one, because they all just ship to me. They won't have your name specifically on them unless you have a DigiKey account. If you just ordered from a cart, you have to be able to suss out which one is yours. Same thing on PCBs, but you guys are welcome to go down and pick those up yourselves if you'd like to before Friday. PCBs, if they come in today or tomorrow while I'm not around, I'll email out and let everyone know and go pick them up from the first floor. Yeah. So it'll be here Friday? I assume so. So Friday, it's Friday. We'll get them in and get going. Any other questions? So I posted the next homework because of Thanksgiving break. We'll have that due before Thanksgiving break, a week from today. One problem on resonant switch converters should be relatively simple. And then we'll have one more homework due the last day of class. Just to make sure you have a chance to see the topics that we're going to talk about now. And then we'll have the final. Like I said, when we were discussing midterm, I don't want to change up formats for the two exams. So we'll do a take-home final. Just that way, the final exam, you kind of know what to expect from an exam from me.
Yeah. Question on the last lecture. Can you explain how you get this?
What part of it?
How do you get that from the previous equation?
Since I don't have that slide in here, why don't we talk about that after class or in office hours, just so that it's not a specific thing with you and I that other people can't follow. But that works for you. Yeah.
Sure. Are you just having the final over the slide? This is like a week after.
We have a site visit. looking at giving out the final the last day of class, and having to do a week later, but that's a fair point. Let me think about that and get back to you. Oh, who planned that? Not a joke. I didn't get to choose that. Okay. Yeah. Let me think about that. I've got limited ability to shift that around based on when finals end, but I can try to ease that burden to some degree. Other questions, Colin? Did you have one? Okay. Yeah. I didn't consider that, but should. Okay. If nothing else, then we are going to shift gears today and take a look back at what we've done so far in the course and then motivate the couple remaining topics that we'll be covering. Okay. So far in terms of converter topologies, we've kind of, I'm going to divide up the space of topologies out there. I'll say that we've covered PWM small ripple topologies extensively in prerequisites to this course. Assume that that's pretty well understood and well known. In this course, we've largely looked at extending those into things that have soft switching types of behaviors, either by taking a PWM converter and replacing with quasi-resonant or quasi-square wave switches. We looked at early in the course, just allowing large ripple on an inductor and a buck or boost, which was equivalent to making it a quasi-square wave ZVS switch. And then resonant or AC link converters, these topologies where we have really separatable, physically disparate inverter, rectifier, and then a tank. So that doesn't cover everything. And we'll also look at techniques that we have to deal with these. So averaging, of course, whether through waveform averaging or switch averaging or state space averaging, applies very directly to small ripple type PWM converters, but has some issues when we have converters that have significant high frequency dynamics. So the average over an AC link converter, the average of everything in the tank is zero because it's all AC. If I average over switching periods, so we need a new technique to deal with that. Then we use state plane analysis as one method of doing that, solving the behavior when I have significant single frequency resonant intervals. And really then combine that with filter elements to be able to get a solution to the overall converter. And then we've looked at sinusoidal analysis up for these AC link converters. We covered somewhat briefly the idea that this is commonly used. It's generally less accurate than things like state plane analysis. So that's some, as I'm drawing here, vertical slice of what's out there, but doesn't cover everything. So if we look at other topologies, kind of separate from anything we've looked at, are switch capacitor converters. That's what we're going to talk about next. And these came up in some of your type 4 designs for the tiny box challenge. People looked into these and had, in my opinion, there were a few misconceptions there. I think they're worth covering and talking about what these can do. So here on the left, I kind of put these quasi-resonant and quasi-square wave converters as in some sense an intermediary between full resonant converters, where waveforms are full sinusoidal, and PWM converters. Here we have some intervals which are sinusoidal, some intervals which are more or less linear. Okay. Switch capacitor converters, then the intermediary here is really perhaps not given such a formal name, but often referred to as hybrid switch capacitor converters. Switch capacitor converters being nothing but switches and capacitors. Hybrid switch capacitors being kind of derived from a switch capacitor converter, but then having inductors in them that behave more or less as PWM inductors to modify the switch capacitor with some advantageous characteristics. Then as I continue examining this space, can look at things like resonant switch capacitor converters or multi-level converters, kind of span the gap in between once I allow myself to start adding inductors to switch capacitor converters or adding switch capacitor type energy transfer to PWM. And I can make those inductors resonate with my switch caps, or I can go to multi-level, which in general gets rid of the switch capacitor energy transfer but looks a whole lot like a switch capacitor converter. And from this point on, things start to get real muddy, where I could pick some topology here and find you a paper where they say this is a switch capacitor converter where I added an inductor and then made it resonant. Another paper where they said it's a quasi-resonant and I added an extra level to it. Another paper says this is a multi-level converter with a small inductance. So things in the middle kind of get nebulous in terms of what really is this. Does this count as switch capacitor or PWM or what? So this drawing is kind of, this is not formal in any way, this is just my take on giving you an idea of where these things fall relative to one another. Okay. And then beyond this, there's some other things, MMC, Z-Source, Matrix, a bunch of other types of topologies that we're not going to talk about at all. Okay. But this, just put these in here to note, this is not the full scope of everything you could possibly do, but it covers a wide range of what's commonly researched and being used. is when I look at this larger space of potential topologies and then say, okay, what have we covered in terms of analysis methods, I can extend out and say, okay, averaging can cover then a larger range, these switch capacitors, if I add in basically charge balance equations, which is going to be fundamentally a little bit different to apply than some of the previous averaging techniques. But here, where I have kind of largely small ripple equations on everything, I can stick with general averaging. State plane can come out and cover resonant switch capacitors, so just have an LC resonance. And then sinusoidal analysis is going to be less useful. I can also pull up averaging to cover multi-level converters, depending on exactly how I design them. I can somewhat with these techniques and some extension based on averaging of charge transfer and switch capacitor converters cover a lot of this space with these disparate methods, but all have caveats. Averaging works only when small ripple is a good approximation of the behavior of the converter. State plane works with a single frequency resonance during any single period. Sinusoidal analysis works if I have some converter where it's got a high Q bandpass characteristic where only a single frequency passes through. Okay. So we're going to talk about switch capacitor first, like I said, but then after that, we're going to talk about discrete time modeling, which will kind of unify this. This is just a fundamental method to solve any type of switch system. It's going to be valid regardless of whether I have resonance or multi-frequency, anything else. We'll do that after covering switch caps. That's kind of the trajectory for the remainder of the course. Okay. Questions or comments on that? Anything else we should cover instead?
All the stuff on the final list. I'm not saying I want to pay attention to the
final. Yes, everything in any lecture is on the final. Any other questions? All right, so our two major remaining topics, we're going to start in on switch capacitor converters today. Okay. So, begin with motivation. Why might we look at switch capacitor converters? With, you know, the idea being this is a converter that has only capacitive energy storage, no inductors in them, initially, and like I said, later extend those to contain inductors. So this is a plot just of energy density, various voltage of some commercial inductors in these red X's, and then some multi-layer ceramic capacitors, these blue dots taken from a reference down here at the bottom. You can see energy density generally much higher for discrete capacitors than what we can do for inductors. If we're looking at things like high density converters, we need a given amount of energy storage internally. Using capacitors for that energy storage should result in a smaller overall converter size. That becomes, you know, even more significant when we're looking at things like small power integrated converters. If I want to be able to integrate an entire power converter onto a single piece of silicon, a monolithic converter, I can do a fair amount of energy storage with good characteristics and on-chip caps, but on-chip inductors are generally no good. So these switch capacitor converters initially used heavily in integrated power conversion, where the power switches, the controls, and the storage are all on a single monolithic piece of silicon. And then more recently have grown to be used actually in discrete implementations at higher power and higher voltages. Okay. So just to start in with an example converter, something at the top is a 2-to-1 switch capacitor converter. And to just get an idea of the operation, we're just going to intuit the analysis of this. We've done for this one pretty simply in order to solve what it's doing. Okay. So this thing's going to be operated. I've got four switches, the two gate drive signals, G1 and G2. So the first and third set are going to be on at the same time, and the second and fourth set are going to be on at the same time, which is going to reduce to two equivalent subcircuits. This one, one, this one, two. Subcircuit one with G1 and G4 on, I'm connecting this C fly in series between the input and output, like this on the bottom left. Subinterval two, G2 and G4, or the second and fourth device, turn on when G2 is high, which will short C-fly in parallel with the output. So the C-fly is sometimes called the flying capacitor because it's the one that's moving around here. It moves up in series between the input and output and then down in parallel with the output. Okay. And if I make some assumptions here, so let's assume V is approximately constant. So my output voltage is steady at some value V. Really say that my output capacitance is sufficiently large to hold that. And then assume in both 1 and 2, C-fly charges or discharges to steady state. What I mean by there is if I hook a capacitor into a circuit, and we'll look at this in detail in a moment, its voltage may change. If I'm charging it through an RC type circuit, it's going to have some exponential. Whatever circuit I hook it up into, I give it long enough that exponential is decayed out and it's reached whatever its final value is. Okay? So I can approximate it as just where it ends up. So if I make those assumptions, then I can write two equations for what the voltage on V fly is, right? So in subinterval 2, V fly is V, shorted to the output. Subinterval 1, V fly is VG minus V. It's just in series between the two. Let's say in 2, V fly is equal to V. In 1, V fly is equal to VG minus V. So that's true. Assume this capacitor is constantly charging between these two voltages. If the capacitor is large enough, it should really hold a constant voltage. So I should be able to set these two equal to one another. The small ripple applies on this capacitor. That'll give me V is equal to VG minus V, or V is equal to VG over 2. So this is a 2-to-1 converter. Okay, well, what's interesting about that? Okay, I made some assumptions, kind of intuited this result, but I got a result for the conversion ratios that has no dependence on anything that I'm doing with switching, right? M is 1/2, it's not D times 1/2, it's not FS times 1/2, it's just 1/2. So if these assumptions hold, I have no control over this conversion ratio at all. It's just 1/2, I can't make it 1 over 2.1, I can't change that. Okay, it's just a 2-to-1 converter. Okay. So the main caveat with switch capacitor converters is they have a fixed conversion ratio. There's no ability to use them for regulation except linear type regulation. What I mean by that is, I guess, i.e., lossy regulation. I can, in fact, slightly change the conversion ratio, but I do so by just dumping energy into losses to get the output voltage to drop. Okay. We'll look at this in the coming slides, but even from what we've looked at previously in the course, if I have a voltage source charging a capacitor, I have losses in that, even if I have no resistance. We looked at that previously for COSS type losses. If I short capacitor to a voltage source, I'm going to lose half the energy that's supplied by the voltage source in that switching action and switching and shorting it in there. So with switch capacitor converters, even if I have no resistance, I'm still going to have losses due to this hard charging, we call it, with voltage sources being shorted to capacitors. Whereas in PWM type converters, if I assume every element is ideal, the efficiency should go to 100%, right? No resistances and no switching losses anywhere. Right? But benefits can be quite small. Capacitors on chip being good. These things are good candidates for full integration where everything can be on silicon, no external passives. This is beneficial in many microelectronics applications. Okay. This applies to pure switch caps. We mentioned briefly resonant versions and hybrid versions. Resonant versions generally don't give you any additional regulation without changing the mode of operation significantly, but they can reduce losses associated with charging and discharging these capacitors and give you things like VVS and VCS. Hybrid versions can allow additional regulation by inserting an inductor in there and allowing PWM type regulation along with the switch capacitor conversion. Okay. So I want to look in a little more detail at the operation of this 2-to-1, see if we can get a little bit better understanding of it than just what we intuited there. To do that, I'm just going to look generally at types of capacitor charging. And we're going to start with capacitor charging from a voltage source, and then just to build and understand where these hybrid and resonant versions come from, we're also going to look at current source charging and resonant charging through simple circuits. Okay. So starting from a voltage source, the meaning of that is I'm looking at a circuit that looks like what we've done before with just a difference in initial conditions. I'm going to look at a switch that closes at time t is equal to zero, some resistance and some capacitance. I'm going to call my source V2, and I'm going to say that my initial capacitor voltage V sub C at time t is equal to zero is equal to V1, which is less than V2. Set up a circuit here where prior to the time the switch closes, I have V1 on this capacitor, then the switch is going to close, and I'm going to pull the voltage up to V2 over time. Right? So if I look at the dynamics of that, V sub C starts out at V1, and when the switch closes, I just have a voltage source RC, so I know I'm going to get this exponential type rise up to a value V2. At the same time, I'm going to have a current that flows through this. Call it IC, which is going to hop up. Initially, when the switch closes, I'm going to have V2 minus V1 over R. I'll have that peak, and then this is going to have an exponential decay down to zero. Peak value. Okay, so initially what we're going to look at is really substantiating what I made here as an assumption about operation. C5 has fully reached its kind of steady state within each interval. This is to say, within the converter operation, whenever something like this happens, whenever I'm charging or discharging a capacitor, I'm going to look at some time way out here and assume that I stick in that switching subinterval until this voltage has reached its steady state value. If this is an exponential, to actually reach that value requires infinite time, but after 3, 4, 5 time constants, it's within less than 1%. Okay. What I'm going to say is that we're going to look at the charging over a time, T sub C, I'll call it, which is much, much greater than the time constant RC of this circuit. I'll say that it's much longer than that. Then at this time, the voltage on the capacitor is pretty much V2. It would be a couple hundredths of a percent less. You can approximate it as just reaching V2. Okay. So treating this as part of my converter operation. Should be something like, okay, when I switch into this subinterval, I've got an effective source of VG minus V that's shorted to the cap through a switch with some resistance. We could model kind of what's going on here. Or in this one, I've got C fly and I shorted. If I called this a switch and some resistance at the beginning of this interval, we'd have the same equivalent circuit, which is why I want to look at this equivalent circuit on its own. Okay. So what I'd be interested in here then is things like how much energy gets transferred to the cap and how much energy is lost in the process of doing so. It will say, how can I design this thing to be part of a power converter, still be reasonably efficient, even though I know this is a lossy energy transfer process. Okay. So the case we've already looked at in the course was always charging this capacitor from zero to V2, right? We've looked at that previously for COSS losses, and we know, okay, when I close this switch, if I transfer E to this capacitor, I'll lose E on this resistor when the voltage goes from zero to V2. The difference in a switch capacitor converter is we're going to go from V1 to V2 always and see, is there a way that we can get better than this 50% efficiency, less than half of my energy transfer lost on the resistor. Okay. So if I look at what happens through this process, I've got a change in energy in the capacitor. That change in energy in the capacitor is just the difference between the energy at T equals zero and the energy out here at T equal to TC. And that we can just write as it's 1/2 C V2 squared minus 1/2 C V1 squared. The energy at the end in the capacitor minus the energy at the beginning in the capacitor. Which then I'll write as 1/2 C V2 squared minus V1 squared. So that's the amount of energy that the source delivered to the capacitor. And next, I want to know how much energy actually came out of the source in that process. And I'm going to call that delta EV for the moment, just for how much energy came out of this V2 voltage source over the same charging interval. Okay, I'm going to define that as the integral of V2 times the current that came out of it for T is greater than zero, that is just the capacitor current. I'm going to integrate from zero to TC, and I'm going to say TC is approximately infinity for all intents and purposes. In integrating these exponentials, because TC is so much greater than my RC time constant. Okay. V2 is constant, so I can pull that out front to say it's the integral of the capacitor current dt. And then flip this into integral in terms of voltage, as we've done before. More briefly, I can just say, in doing that process, I'll have V2 times the integral of the current that goes into the capacitor over the entire charging time. That's the total charge, the integral of current that went into the capacitor. V2 times QC equal to V2 times, okay, the charge that went into the capacitor, and I should really call this delta QC, or the change in charge in the capacitor over this interval. And that change in charge is going to be C times the change in voltage. Okay. There's our energy supplied, our energy that actually made it to the cap. So we lost whatever the difference is between the two. Look like EV minus EC. And so what'll I get here? I'll have CV2 squared minus a half CV2 squared. Give me 1/2 CV2 squared. And this term, minus 1/2 CV1 squared. And then I'm just going to have this cross term here, CV2 V1, that I subtract off. Did I mess up a sign? I did. This should be plus here, excuse me. Minus 1/2 CV1 squared. That look like I'm going to pull 1/2 C out to the front. And I'll get V2 squared plus V1 squared. And then since I pulled out a 1/2 that this term didn't have, I'll just be left with a 2 there. Minus 2 C, oops, C came out, V1, V2. Hey, what does that thing in the square brackets look like? I take. Yeah, so it's V2 minus V1 quantity squared, right? So then I square that, I'll get two of the cross terms and then the square of the individual terms when I FOIL it out. This looks like 1/2 C 2 minus V1 squared. Cool about that is this thing, the delta VC, we'll call it, of the capacitor, whatever the change was in the voltage on the capacitor. So I delivered an energy that was square of V2 minus square of V1, and I lost an energy that's the square of the difference. Okay. Plug in and just compute the efficiency of this in a second, but just looking at that, what can you say? Okay, as these numbers get big, this is gonna be a lot bigger than this, right? I say, V2 is 10 and V1 is 9. This is 100 minus 81, 19. Delivered 1/2 C, 19 energy. And 10 minus 9 is 1, so I have 1/2 C times 1 energy. So I had almost 20 times as much energy delivered as was lost in the process. If I have large voltages and small delta Vs, this can be a fairly efficient energy transfer process. Okay. If, as was the case that we looked at with COSS losses, V1 is zero and I'm charging from zero to V2, then these two are equal and I lose half my energy in the process. Because it reduces nicely, let's look at the efficiency of this. So I'm going to say, is the energy delivered to the capacitor over this energy that came from the source? The energy efficiency of this transfer process. So that's going to look like the ratio of these two things, the energy in the capacitor, 1/2 C, V2 squared minus V1 squared, over the total energy, which was this V2 C, V2 minus V1. Okay, I'm going to then rewrite this get rid of V1 and write it in terms of this delta VC. Delta VC is just the difference between V2 and V1, so I can replace all my V1s with V2 minus delta VC. It'll look like, go ahead and cancel my C's. I'm going to pull the 1/2 out front. And then in the numerator, I'll have V2 squared minus V2 minus delta VC squared, just replacing that V1 squared. And then the denominator, I'll have V2 times V2 minus delta VC. Okay, let me multiply some of this stuff out. Numerator, I'm going to have V2 squared minus, as I square this term out, I'm going to have a V2 squared. Those will cancel. I'll just get the cross terms 2 V2 delta VC and then the delta VC squared in the numerator. And minus minus, I'm trying to get my units right. It'll be plus minus delta VC squared. Numerator, then the denominator, I've got V2 minus V2. Those go away. Negative and negative, I'll get positive delta VC times V2. Okay. Then I'm going to divide the top and the bottom by what I have in the denominator, get everything up. So 2 V2 delta VC, I'll get 1 minus delta VC squared over 2 V2 delta VC. And then I can cancel this delta VC with one of these. Let me just erase this stuff. Get 1 minus delta VC over 2 V2. Okay, so if I want this process to be efficient, what do I want to do? I've intuited it on the previous slide, but I want V2 to be big and delta VC to be small. I want to have a lot of voltage on these caps, and I want to only charge them a little bit at a time. Okay. That is going to push us towards designing these things such that the assumptions I made in our initial analysis are more or less valid, right? So in this 2-to-1, said, okay, assume that we completely charge and discharge and assume that the cap is big enough that the voltage in subinterval 1 is the same as the voltage in subinterval 2. So there's really small ripple on it, stays constant, and then that's how we got this 1/2. Don't need to design it that way, but if the voltage in this subinterval is significantly different than the voltage in this subinterval for V-fly, means it charges up and down quite a bit, means it's going to be very lossy and inefficient. So I'm going to try to design it so that that's true anyway. Okay, so that is the main energy transfer mechanism in these switch cap converters. What I'm going to do while we're kind of in this mode of looking at generalized circuits is also talk about charging from a current source and charging through an LC resonance for comparison. And these aren't going to be applicable to that 2-to-1 we just looked at, but this is what we'll see when I have a hybrid switch capacitor converter or a resonant switch capacitor converter later. So I want to just work them out at this point. So for this slide, I'm going to look at charging the capacitor from a current source, and I'm going to try to make this as comparable as possible to what we did on the previous slide. So I'm going to set up that current source, but it still charges the capacitor from V1 to V2, and it does so in a time TC. I'm going to keep the same time and same limits on the capacitor. In order to do that, I'll have a current source, and I'm going to pulse it from time t is equal to 0 to time tc with a current capital I. And I'm going to use that to charge a capacitor. same C, same initial condition, and then VC of T is equal to TC, same final condition. Okay, so what will that look like? Call this the same T sub C, which we never really defined, but we said it has to be much greater than RC. If I use that same time here, my current source is going to pulse up to a peak current I and hold it for that whole time. This is my I of T. And during that time, my voltage on the capacitor is going to start at V1, and then it's going to ramp up and then end at V2. So to make this all work, I need a specific current. The current needs to be such that whatever level this is, it gives this V2 minus V1 delta V to the cap over a time T sub C. It'll tell me in my current I is going to be the current that'll make the capacitor change from V2 to V1, which means I added a certain amount of charge to it, D times V2 minus V1. Over a time T sub C, current is charge per time. It'll look like C times V2 minus V1 over T sub C. It's gonna be the value of the current during this. Okay, and then let's look at the same thing. So how much energy did I give to the cap? Delta EC. Well, there should be no change. I have the same capacitance and same voltage limits. This is still 1/2 C V2 squared minus V1 squared. Difference is going to be in how much energy was required in order to do that. When I look at my delta EI, or the amount of energy that came out of the current source, that is integral 0 to TC of, call this voltage V sub I, voltage on the current source, times I of T dt. And what are those things? Okay, I of T from 0 to TC, it's always just this capital I that we just wrote here. VI is the voltage on the cap plus the voltage on the resistor. So VI is going to look something like, during this interval, this. Which is V sub C plus IR. Hey, we don't really care outside of this interval, but then it should drop down zero voltage on the resistor. Okay, so when I go to integrate this, I of T, wrote of T just because it looks weird to just have an I floating there, but both these are functions of time, potentially. But over the interval from 0 to TC, I is just capital I. I can pull that out of the integral as a constant. And then VI is this trapezoidal thing. It's going to look like I times the integral of this purple waveform, which just looks like the average value of VI times the time. The average value of this trapezoidal linearly increasing voltage waveform is just its average value, right? This will look like I times, bring the TC up here, times the average value of VI over this interval, which is going to be start value V1 plus IR plus where it ends, V2 plus IR over 2. Get the average value of it over that interval. Okay. I've got this term out front, I times TC. Look back, I times TC is going to be C times V2 minus V1. The current times time is the charge. This will look like C V2 minus V1 for this. Then up on the top, I've got V1 plus IR plus V2 plus IR, which would be V1 plus V2 plus 2IR. So I'm going to try to multiply this out. I'm going to take this V2 minus V1 term and multiply it by the numerator up here. I'm going to do that in two parts. I'm going to first do V2 minus V1 times V2 plus V1. Let's multiply these two things together. It'll give me V1 squared plus V2 squared, and the cross terms will cancel because of the opposite signs. And then I'll have V2 minus V1 times this 2IR. That'll end up looking like 1 half C times V1 squared, V2 squared minus V1 squared plus 2IR V2 minus V1. And then I'm just going to take that thing and break it up into two terms. I'll have the 1 half C times V2 squared minus V1 squared plus 1 half C times 2IR times V2 minus V1. And this first term, 1 half C times the differences in the squares, is the energy that went to the capacitor. Same thing, right? Delta EC. So the second term, the additional energy supplied from the source, that's all the energy that's lost, right? Whatever the difference between the two is, it's here. That, as written, perhaps not so clear to see what it means. What I'm going to do is I'm going to plug in for I with this expression here. That's going to give me a V2 minus V1. It multiplies the V2 minus V1, so I'll V2 minus V1 squared. First term will stay. Two R times I should give me C over TC, V2 minus V1 squared. Let me combine these. I'm just going to put this as RC over TC. Okay, what can I say about that? First term, the energy that went to the cap. Then here I have 1 half C V2 minus V1 squared, 1 half C delta VC squared. If I neglect this thing, 2RC over TC, that is what I had in the previous case, 1 half C delta V squared. I get that same thing just multiplied by 2RC over TC. So this, if I got rid of it, I'd have the same thing as what I had in the voltage source charging case. So this is the difference in loss between charging with the current source and charging with the voltage source. This term is one, there's no difference. This term is really small, it's way more efficient to charge with the current source. So what can we say about this term? Well, RC over TC, I'm saying I matched TC here and in the previous case, I used the same time and same voltage limits. My assumption here was that TC is much, much greater than the time constant of the system. So TC is much greater than RC. That means that the denominator here is much greater than the numerator, and I have some less than one scale factor here, and this is going to be much more efficient than the voltage source type charging. That's generally true. I can charge much faster, much more efficiently through a current source than this voltage source type charging with a huge peak current and an exponential decay. Okay. Then you start saying, well, what happens if TC is much less than RC? This would actually be greater than one. Is this charging less efficient than the voltage source charging in that case? Well, actually, what it comes down to is our solution doesn't apply here anymore. So if I start going out of time less than one time constant, I can't make all the approximations I made where I say it went from V2 to V1. After one time constant, it's only 60-some percent of the way there. So then this solution wouldn't be valid if that inequality didn't hold. So that's the comparison of the two. The fact that this is much less than one is the reason why things like hybrid switch capacitor converters are used, to reduce the losses associated with charging and discharging these things. Okay. Out of time, so we'll pick up there on Friday. Yeah.
So because of the factor of the series
resistance, so here, resistance actually matters. This is a good point. You can continue packing up as you like, I already said. Here, resistance matters, right? Low resistance will make this lossless. Here, resistance doesn't matter. Okay, it is what it is. As long as this holds, which is going to be where the resistance does matter, because if the resistance is really big, then you need to charge much longer. You need to have a longer TC to keep this inequality true. And as you actually plug that into a converter, that almost always results in a larger delta VC. So this delta, where V2 and V1 are, come from the converter and what it's doing. Can't abstract that away. If I start switching way slower, the cap's going to discharge more before I charge it back up. There's a bit of interplay there that we'll get into a little later. But at the moment, R doesn't matter here. In the current source, it does depend on R.